So there's a battle, and the Jewish people are victorious, and that's really nice. And this battle is it's a unique battle. It's not a battle of conquest, it's a battle of vengeance. It's a battle against raw evil, actually. But that's a subject for another day. And Parshas Matos, at this point, we have a conjoined Parsha. So it's two aliyahs for the most part at a time. And in the second reading for today, which is Matos and Maaseh Mechuborim, we are going to pick it up towards the end, which would be on chapter 31, verse 21. So there's the aftermath of the battle, the soldiers who behave and comport themselves in an extraordinarily moral manner, but other people then behave not so appropriately. And Moshe Rabbeinu gets upset, but we're not going to focus on that today. In verse 21, Elazar HaKoyen addresses the legions of soldiers who have returned, and they have spoils of war. Vayoymer Elazar HaKoyen al Anshe HaTzava. Elazar HaKoyen speaks to the men of war, Haboyim LaMelchama, who are coming to war. And he says, Zois Chukas HaTorah. This is the statute of the Torah, Asher Tziva Hashem Es Moshe, which God has commanded Moshe. This verse, of course, has many questions that are attached to it. The first question, most important question, is why is Elazar speaking? Why is Moshe Rabbeinu not speaking? And then why does he say La Milchama? Haboyim, it shouldn't say Meha Milchama, from the war. Why does it say going to the war? Interestingly, Rashi doesn't even address that. And then he says, this is the Chuk of the Torah, which Moshe has commanded us. So it is very much about Moshe. So the Sefarno says like this. He says, Moshe Rabbeinu gave permission to Elazar HaKoyen to speak at this point. And this was about when Moshe Rabbeinu would no longer be here, there was a concern that people would not accept Elazar HaKoyen's authority. And they would say, you know, during the time of Moshe, you never had the guts to raise your head to speak publicly. And now all of a sudden, you're a spokesperson. Now you're a leader. And we have something similar with regard to Yehoshua, that Hashem tells Moshe Rabbeinu to appoint Yehoshua. And then he says, ensure that Yehoshua will address the nation. Why? Well, because otherwise they say, Yehoshua, he never opened his mouth in front of his teacher. Now all of a sudden he's opening his mouth. Now he raises his head. So it was very important for Yehoshua to speak in the time of Moshe Rabbeinu, before Moshe Rabbeinu. So the Sefarno says the same happens here with Elazar. This is an opportunity. This is the final battle before the Jewish people will actually begin the conquest of Eretz Yisrael. Moshe Rabbeinu, subsequent to this, will begin the final farewell speech to the Jewish people. We're now going into the winter of the last year in the desert. And therefore, it's Elazar who addresses the people. So that's the Sefarno's approach. I will tell you that Rashi has a very different approach, but I'm not going to go there because we're going to keep this piece separate from, not as an add-on to before. The last question I'm going to try to answer is, why does it say La Milchama? It says Haboim, who are coming to the war, when in fact these are people who are coming home from the war. So the Ipsadri Gaon says that's what it means. He says La Milchama means like Meha Milchama. However, other Mepharshim explain that Moshe Rabbeinu at this point was not speaking to the Jewish people. Like Rashi says, he became upset, and because of this, Moshe Rabbeinu did not have clarity. So and Moshe Rabbeinu gave them specific instructions about coming home from that battle. Whereas Yehoshua said, what I'm going to tell you is not the aftermath of the battle, it's not what you have to do now because of what happened in the last little while, but rather what I'm going to tell you is related to La Milchama, when you go to war in the future. This will be a reality you deal with. This is something for posterity, much, much different than the words that Moshe Rabbeinu was speaking to the Jewish people before. So that's the idea of La Milchama. Now, Rashi, we'll pick it up at Rashi, like halfway through the Pasuk. Rashi says, Asher Tziva Hashem Es Moshe. This is the commandment that God gave Moshe, right? So the commandment is here, it's a chukah. So Rashi says, even though for whatever reason Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't speaking either because of Rashi's approach, and Moshe didn't have clarity because he had come to a state of upset, or because, like the Sefarno says, it was Elazar's opportunity to raise his head and speak before Moshe Rabbeinu, says Rashi, Tola ha'ira b'rabbi. When he spoke, he spoke about the teaching he had heard from his teacher. So in other words, yes, on one hand, Allah Azza wa Jalla was speaking, but at the same time, on the other hand, with great humility and recognizing that the teachings that he had was a direct, something he received and a direct link to Moshe Rabbeinu. The Chizkuni says that it says Zeis Chukas HaTorah, because amongst the things we're going to be talking about here is the purity which is attained when something came in contact with the dead, and then it needs the Parah Aduma, and we know, of course, that's the archetypal Chukah. So because that's what we're talking about here, that's why he introduces this as Zeis Chukas HaTorah. Okay, so that's the preamble, and having said that, once we finish off with the entering into this conversation, what exactly is Yehoshua going to tell them? So Allah is going to tell them. He says, Ach es hazov v'es hakesef v'es hanacheshes es habarzel v'es habedil. He says to them, now, with regard to the various artifacts that you have captured in battle, the various spoils of war, so which are silver, copper, iron, and tin, v'esay feres, and lead. So all of these things, kol davar, all of these metal implements, asher yovei ba'esh, if it came into contact with the fire, ta'avidu ba'esh, you'll pass it through the fire, v'toher, and then it'll be purified. Ach, v'meinida yischata, but it may require meinida in order to be cleansed. V'chol asher le yovei ba'esh, ta'avidu ba'moyim, but if it didn't come into fire, then you place it in water. Which, of course, seems to make absolutely no sense. What is this pasuk talking about? So here we're going to go to Rashi. I'm going to go through this pasuk slowly, piece by piece, to see how three different kinds of cleansing are going to come to light here. Pasuk Chav Beis. Ach es azov. Elazar HaKoyen begins his words with the word ach. Why does he say ach? Ach is a miut. Ach is coming to exclude. It's something exclusionary. It's only this, not something else. What's the only this? It says Rashi, the idea of the ach is, af al pi, even though, shelehizur lechem Moshe, el al hichos tumah, even though in Moshe Rabbeinu spoke to you, the only kind of cleansing he referenced, the only kind of toxin that he referred to was ritual impurity, oid yeshli lahazir lechem al hichos gil, I have to tell you about the laws of koshering. Of koshering. Gil is koshering. And this is the laws of koshering. So what's ach? Va'ach, loshen miut. And the fact that ach is exclusionary, it comes to exclude koloimer, memu'otim atem ilehishtamish bekelim. You are to refrain. You are withheld from using these artifacts or implements, afilu la'achar taharoson mitumas hameis, even after it has become purified from coming in contact with the dead, ad shi taharu miblias isur nevelos, until it's going to become cleansed of the various non-kosher substances that it could have absorbed. In other words, Moshe Rabbeinu spoke to you about coming clean, but things came in contact with the dead. Okay, there was a war over here, and in every war, sickeningly, there's dead bodies, and there's dead bodies, so things become ritually impure. So now you want to use things in the camp, you want to bring it into your own scrimmage, you have to make sure that it's ritually pure, that it's no longer something which has tumah attached to it. However, Lazar said, in addition to the tumah, there's another issue here. There's a question of non-kosher substances that have become absorbed into the actual density of the metal artifacts that we're talking about. And therefore, those have to be cleansed. So Rashi, and that's a different form of cleansing. That's not from ritual purity and impurity. This is more of a chemical thing. This is a technical reality where you have actual non-kosher substance, and non-kosher substance has to be removed through a process of sterilization. Now Rashi himself is still not satisfied with the word ach. He gave us really two explanations for ach. He said ach means I'm coming to, in addition to. There's something else I have to tell you. Before this, what Moshe Rabbeinu said. And then it's also Lashem Miyot, comes to exclude, says, even if you do the things Moshe Rabbeinu said, you still can't use these things because they're not kosher. And because you have non-kosher substance, you're not going to be able to use it. However, it's this ach. 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 So what how do we understand the ach? So here Rashi quotes the Sefri Zuta, and he says, ach es hazohov. When it says only the gold, Leimer, that is, Shetzarach l'haver chaluda shalei koidim shiyig yagileno. That before you go ahead and you kosher, before you sterilize, you have to be sure to remove the rust. So if there's any kind of rust, anything superficial that attaches itself to the metal that's going to be kosher or sterilized, first you have to remove that substance, which could serve as a barrier between the actual metal, between the actual substance, the matter that you're going to sterilize and cleanse, and between the waters that are going to cleanse it, with the fire that's going to cleanse it. Now we know the meaning of ach. That there can't be anything else. Only the gold. Only the silver. Only the copper, the iron, the tin. The metal that you're going to kosher has to be only the metal. Nothing else. And this is actually the halacha. That's what we do. So in other words, not only the gold itself or the silver itself, or pardon me, only the gold and silver itself. Not anything that could have become a foreign substance like rust that is an adhesion on the surface. Kol asher yovei ba'esh. So then the pasuk says, whatever comes in fire, you'll put through fire. But whatever comes, ach b'mei nidyas chata, but you put it in water. If it didn't come in fire, then it goes in water. So what's going on? Rashi explains. This is a kind of a synoptic verse, which includes many things. And now he explains. Anything that comes to fire means levashel beklum, something which is used for cooking purposes. So if it's used for cooking purposes, we have to look how it was used for cooking purposes. It depends on the way it was used. Taviru be'esh means kederech tashmishoy hagolosay. The way it's used, that's the way it's sterilized or koshered. So, misha tashmishoy al yedei chamin, something which is used through heat, which would mean hot water, you use it to cook things. Yagilenu b'chamin, you sterilize it in hot water. Umisha tashmisha yayidei tzoli, but something which is used in the barbecue, something which is used on an open flame, kigoyin hashpud, like for example the spit, va'askila, or a grate, which is used on the actual fire in the open flame, yilabnu v'oyer, that has to be heated with white hot fire. And only when it's made white hot through fire, only then will it be koshered. We would use today a blowtorch for this. Ach, the main nida is chata, but it still has to go into the main nida. What's the main nida? So Rashi says, lefi pshutei, on a literal level, chitoi zeh, this cleansing, refers to the concept of the parah aduma, letarei metumas meis, to cleanse it from the fact that it came in contact with the dead. And this is what he told to them. Tzarichim hakelim gil. The vessels, the pots and pans, the cutlery, it has to be sterilized. And the reason it has to be sterilized is l'tahara min ha'isur, because it has to be cleansed from the fact that it has prohibited substance that's now absorbed into it. The chitui, and then there's another cleansing, and that's l'tahara min ha'tuma. That's to cleanse it from ritual impurity. Rabbi Seinu Darshan Mikan, our rabbis expounded, Sha'af lach shidan min ha'isur hitin tvila lechli matches, that even if it didn't come in contact with the dead, but it was just being used by its previous non-Jewish ownership, so that means that it has to go into a mikveh. Because when it's going from one jurisdiction to the next jurisdiction, it has to be cleansed in the mikveh. So what is the meaning of mein nida here? That's not usually what it refers to, the ashes of the red heifer, which are mixed together with special water and then sprinkled. But instead, this is darshu mayim haru'uyin litvo behem nida. A person who is in a state of nida would go to mikveh, in other words, a kosher mikveh. V'chamahim, how much water do you need in one place for a person to be able to go to the mikveh? The answer is arboim so, 40 so. Let's do the next Rashi just to get clarity, and then we'll take a deeper look into all this. Anything which doesn't come in fire, meaning anything which is not used on the fire altogether. For example, kaisas, people use cups. You don't cook, you don't put a cup in the fire, the cup is on the table. The kitoines and jugs, tzlechias, bottles, tashmishan b'tzeina. It's not used with heat altogether. It's used like flatware at the table. So if it's only used with with cold substances, it didn't absorb anything at all. In that case, it doesn't have to be koshered. So what do you do? Then you'll simply rinse it in the mikveh. Matbilon, you'll put it in the mikveh v'dayin, and that's enough. Now Rashi adds, v'davka chli matoches. Here we refer specifically to metal, because pottery can never become cleansed. It's impossible to be able to remove the impurity that gets baked into the pottery, so therefore, no cleansing, no sterilization would ever be able to be effective for pottery. Okay, so this is like a big chunk of stuff, and even though it's Elazar HaKoyen speaking to those who came back from the war, actually, this is very relevant. This is what we do all the time. This is how we kosher a kitchen, and this is how we put things in the mikveh. When we buy things from a non-Jewish source, we put it in the mikveh before we go ahead and use it in a Jewish kitchen. So we're going to recap the three different methods of cleansing here, and the Rebbe is going to give us insight into how we can learn a lesson from these three methods of cleansing as well. So on page Resh, and what is Yud Dalet, Simen Yud Dalet of Parshas Matos, we have a recap of what we just learned and a lesson to be derived. So if you've been following along for the last 15-20 minutes or so, this is what basically rises. This is what comes from everything we learned. When the smoke clears, here's what we get. There are three methods, three halachic methods. Shoinus, very different. Each method is different. And the tafkidon, the purpose of these three distinct halachic methods, is lahachshir kelim, to prepare vessels, l'shimush betara, so that they could be used in a state of ritual purity. The key here is that the word lahachshir, which is Hebrew for what we call euphemistically in English to kosher, means to prepare, to make ready. That's what kosher means. So the point here is lahachshir kelim, to prepare these kelim l'shimush betara. You want to use them in a kosher kitchen. You want to use them in a pure environment. So there's three possibilities of cleansing which are necessary. Three things needed in order to prepare this. Aleph, number one. Kli shenivla bay tam iser. If you have a vessel that has absorbed prohibited substance. Why? Well, because it was roasted, it was cooked. The nature of heat is that it opens the pores, it opens the subatomic molecular structure. And when the subatomic molecular structure becomes open and it's able to absorb, things come into it. That's the basic idea of cooking. You take different things with different tastes, you put them in a pot together, and through heat, now there's an exchange from one to the next. So in the sterilization works with the same principle, that when there's extreme heat, the pores of whatever it may be are able to open up. And when it opens, it's either going to absorb or expel. Now we have a situation where something absorbed. Why? A pot was used with non-kosher meat. If the pot was used with non-kosher meat, what happens is that the non-kosher meat or substance was absorbed into the walls of the pot. This is not any different, just by example, for somebody who's anaphylactic and says that if peanuts are fatal, then they can't use a pot that peanuts were cooked in. Because if his peanut oil was absorbed into the pot, what happens is something else gets cooked and becomes infected with peanut oil. And therefore, it can prove to be very dangerous. So what would happen with a person like that? We would have to sterilize the pots or pans, sterilize the flatware before actually using it with somebody who has that kind of allergy. And similarly, if you had a company which was producing a product which was not nut-friendly, and then they decided to expand their market, they want to be nut-friendly, they want to be able to put a label that nut-friendly, what would they have to do? They would have to kosher. They have to sterilize all of the implements, all the instruments, so that there's no more longer any contamination. Well, that's exactly what kosher means. When a company comes in and koshers a company that was producing ketchup that wasn't kosher because it had, I don't know, some kind of, let's say, animal fat derivative, and now they want to make kosher ketchup. The company decided it wants to expand its ability to sell, and it says kosher market's a good market to get into. What they'll have to do is kosher or sterilize everything that's used for the food. Simple. And the same thing as you come to a kosher kitchen, somebody says, I want to become more observant, I want to come closer to Hashem, I want to have a kosher kitchen. Great. We have pots and pans, you've been using non-kosher food, now we have to kosherize everything. Kosherize means to prepare, that means to remove the substance. That's number one. Number two is, we have a different issue, which in today's day and age, unfortunately, we're not able to observe. At least not fully. And that is when there's a question of ritual purity or impurity. And even though we don't live lives of ritual purity today because we don't have the Beit HaMikdash or we don't have the ashes of the red heifer, nonetheless, since it's an explicit instruction in the Torah, we do not use things in a kosher kitchen if they come from a non-kosher source without first immersing it in the mikveh. And maybe you're familiar with this. People know about bringing their pots and pans to the mikveh. So kli shenitma betumah regila, something which has come in contact with ordinary, pedestrian ritual impurity, but not extreme ritual impurity like coming in contact with the dead, ton tevila, it needs immersion. It has to be absolutely immersed. And then there is a third method. And the third method of cleansing is kli shenitma betumas meis, something which came in contact with the dead. This is ton hazoyos mechatas. This requires the sprinkling of the special waters that are comprised of ashes of the red heifer and special water that's taken from a unique source. That's the three processes of cleansing. We got that clear? Okay. Now the Rebbe says, V'yesh lovayer, after having learned all these technicalities, all this technical halachic business, the Rebbe says we could explain, shekol echad me sugei ha'achshara, that each step of this preparatory activity, toum es sug hapasel shehu bechli, it actually corresponds to the disqualifying agents that have infected the vessel at hand. And the Rebbe explains, kasher kli beleya tam iser, when a vessel, let's say a pot absorbs non-kosher food. So the pot that absorbs non-kosher food, we have a situation where her iser, with a non-kosher substance, is choyder el toichoy upnimiyusei shel hakli. The non-kosher agent has permeated the very depths of this vessel. The vessel itself, the inside of the vessel, the subatomic molecular structure of the vessel has become contaminated. Why? Because it has this foreign substance that's residing inside it. Now, of course, the naked eye can't see it, and you're not be able to touch it with your hands. But as I said, if somebody has a peanut allergy, you'll find that very quickly if it was there, if it was inside. So we have a situation where the offending material has actually permeated the essence of this vessel. What has to happen? Because the offending material has permeated the essence, because it's deep inside the actual wall of the pot. So then what we need to have is pu'ula yisaydis. We need to have a fundamental kind of cleaning. We have to have a permeating kind of cleaning, a cleaning which is able to get beneath the surface, which can pull forth or sterilize or cleanse all the negative material, the offending substance that's become absorbed into the walls of the vessel. And this is the idea of hagala, of boiling in water, sterilization, or libun, or making something white hot. With extreme heat. And what's that purpose of that? To literally uproot the only way we can cleanse, we can fully pull forth all of the offending material is by using this extreme process of cleansing. It's not enough to clean it on the surface. It's not enough to scrub it. You need to use the same heat, whatever heat was used for this substance to make its way into the walls of the pot, that same heat has to now be used to bring it forth, to remove it, to cleanse it, to sterilize it. So that's frame A. Frame A, the offending material has permeated the essence, has gone into the core, beneath the surface. What do we need? A cleansing process which can also go beneath the surface, which can pull it out, which can remove it and expel it from the very deepest, most profound way. Number two, ka'asher kli nitma, when something becomes tame, comes in contact with ritual impurity, hatuma einay chayderes al toichay, the ritual impurity does not, if you will, permeate the essence of this vessel. Ela mishana matzavi ha'elchasi, what it does is it changes its halachic status. Bederech chitzoynis u'makifa, it doesn't go into the actual vessel, but it makes this vessel. This vessel now is called Tahr. Now the vessel is called Tameh. The change is a superficial, an atmospheric. It's the reality that we would, if the function we would use this for. You can't come along and say, you know what happened? The tumah went into the walls. What does that mean? Where's Tuma? It's not. You can't identify it. You can't touch it. You can't see it. You can't sterilize it. So it's not something that actually went inside, that permeated the subatomic structure. It's something that remains. It's something that's only superficial. And because it's only superficial, the removal of this ritual impurity is Deirish Pu'ula Daima. It needs something similar. What do you need? Since the ritual impurity is only superficial, it's only atmospheric, it surrounds it, but it doesn't actually permeate its essence, the way you cleanse yourself of it is by immersion. It goes into a mikvah. That's because that's what it is. The ritual impurity is only on the surface. Because the ritual impurity is on the surface, the way it's able to be cleansed is by immersing it, and the immersion does not go into the actual vessel. It's not hot. It only surrounds it. It envelops it fully. The purifying waters, they surround, but they do not permeate. They do not dig down into the actual wall of the pot. And then we have our third level here. We have a keli which was nitma, a keli which became ritual impure. But the ritual impurity was betumas meis. It was by coming in contact with the dead. So here, hatuma chala alav bederech she'eni nitfeses klal beigoyin. The ritual impurity we speak of here is totally super rational. It makes no sense to us at all. Shekein hames atzmeini mitam, because it's the famous sifri which the Rebbe explained a number of times, that the dead person himself is not tummy. It's only that it causes tuma. It's not tummy himself. So something which is not tummy, and yet it causes tuma. Anything that comes in contact with it will become tummy, although it itself is not tummy. Therefore, since this kind of ritual impurity actually boggles the mind, it does not make sense to us on any kind of rational level. So therefore, the way we are able to release this ritual impurity is also in a manner which is supra-rational entirely. And that is, a tiny drop, but a drop of this water. It's all you need, just one drop of it. It touches it. It's something which is not measured by mass. It's not measured by volume. It's not like you have a big vessel, you got to find a big mikveh. You have a small vessel, you don't need such a big mikveh. Bottom line, as long as it gets fully immersed. Here we're talking about something which one drop makes all the difference. In other words, the three level of ritual impurity are, one is very rational. One makes personal sense. Perfect. I accuse a metaphor of somebody with a peanut allergy. It's logical. And the cleansing process is also logical. The second is less logical. It's not exactly something which we could see, touch, or feel, or know of the symptoms in a literal material way. It's more atmospheric, superficial, but there's this idea of immersion. Total immersion, we release it from that kind of ritual impurity. The last kind of ritual impurity, which makes no sense whatsoever to us, the cleansing process doesn't make sense to us either. Like people take a bath, people take a shower. Other faith systems, they immerse. But a drop of water? What's a drop of water going to do? But the truth is that Tumas Meis does not make sense to us. And because Tumas Meis is something which is super rational, its cleansing process is equally super rational. And perhaps this lines up also with the three ways of our Yiddishkeit. There's Yiddishkeit that's like a mishpatim that makes sense, the rational part of Judaism. There's a part of Judaism which, like a testimonial, doesn't make sense per se, but it does not make sense. You left matzah, you have left Pesach, eat matzah. God worked 7 days, rest on the seventh. Okay, doesn't matter. And then there's parts of Yiddishkeit which we don't understand at all. It's like totally in the level of a chok. And that's Zeis Chukas HaTeira, that the cleansing there also will be in kindred and like fashion. So you see, a halacha about spoils of war, about various forms of uncleanliness, can actually translate into our own Yiddishkeit devotions in today's day and age. And that's all we get today. Or the three levels of cleansing.